following Packers Green 19 podcast is a production of JS Online and Packers News. Here are your hosts, Olivia Reiner and Tom Silverstein. Welcome, everyone, to the Packers News JS Online Green 19 podcast alongside Tom Silverstein. I am Olivia Reiner. I feel so weird, Tom, right now. You know why?
I would like to know why, yes.
Where should we be right now?
I believe that would be Indianapolis, Indiana.
I should be in Indianapolis. You and I should be in Indianapolis right now. I suppose it's the morning, but perhaps by the evening time, we should be out sipping on it. One of the great benefits of being in Indianapolis is that they have Yuengling, which is widely considered by most people to be the best beer in the world. Maybe definitely the country, but maybe the world. I'm going to get a lot of heat for that.
Yeah, you are. You're going to get a lot.
One of the awesome things, like I'm not a huge beer person. Maybe I shouldn't be admitting that either. But I do enjoy a good Yuengling. I'm from the Philadelphia area. Yuengling is a big Pennsylvania beer. They serve it in Indianapolis. Can't find it anywhere in Wisconsin. So one of the fun things about going to Indy is that I can have a Yuengling, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah. The best part about Indy is that you can go out at night and you're actually can count it as working.
It's true.
Because it's so many scouts and coaches and personnel are out and about at night. That's what they do. And many contacts are made in the bars at night. So yeah, I'm kind of missing that, but I'm kind of not too. I'm like, the 3 days is pretty intense with lots of interviews and, you know, bouncing around and chasing people. So to some of that I'm not missing.
It is intense. I do miss it. However, I enjoy sleeping. Sleeping is nice. In Indianapolis, we do not get a lot of sleep. You may remember my very first combine was, I believe, back in 2019, and I had no voice. I don't remember. Maybe I was on the podcast that year. I think my voice was probably gone by then. I don't think I could talk.
Wow.
It was bad, but you live and you learn. I think last year was a lot better for me. I think I managed it a lot better, tried to sleep a little bit more. The fact that it doesn't exist, I think it is easy, myself included, to kind of roll your eyes at the idea of the combine, because what do these workouts really have anything to do with football, running unabated in a straight line for whatever, you know, 40 is probably not the world's greatest indicator of how good of a football player you are. However, there are a lot of benefits to the combine, including especially the medical portion and getting all the participants in one place to do it's relatively, you know, an inexpensive way of getting mass measurements of everybody. But I think even more so, not just an impact on the draft, but also on free agency. I think what people don't understand or realize typically is this is like everyone in the NFL world is coming together, agents, team personnel, front office folks, whatnot. Everyone's coming together in one place. And this is kind of a time for those people to talk about the free agent market, you know, exactly what that's going to look like before the legal tampering period, which is the world's greatest oxymoron in my eyes. So a lot of those conversations aren't happening this time, right, Tom? So we're not hearing a lot about free agents for the most part. And if we are hearing about free agents, it's really broad and general. Like what do you think about, you know, about the implications of not having a combine this year, especially on free agency?
Yeah, it'll really be interesting with free agency because, you know, so typically the club guys station themselves all around wherever their team hotel is. I know where Russ Ball goes and it's sort of like the agents make their rounds and talk to the clubs about, you know, make appointments and sit down with these guys and talk about the future of their clients. And deals are made that really aren't supposed to be made, but it's a real opportunity to do face-to-face, negotiations, or at least inquiries on players. And, you know, and it's also, you never know who you might run into. So an agent might run into a club guy and hear some stuff about who's available. And, you know, they're all trying to gauge the market for their clients. And so it is really kind of a hot spot in that way. And you know, it's a lot harder to, you know, make a phone call and try to get through to some guy than it is to run into him in the hotel lobby and have a couple of minutes with him. So I do think it's going to have an impact on free agency. I also think the interviews that the coaches and personnel people do with players is different. I think you really need to be face-to-face with some of the players because they're coached so well on these interviews that it helps to really be in the room, see them, see their, you know, expressions and kind of read them. And they're not going to be able to do that as much this year. I don't know what they're going to do when they go to pro days, whether they can meet with guys one-on-one, but yeah, that's another part of the combine that'll be missed.
There's a lot to unpack with everything you just said, because there's the two aspects of it, the free agency aspect, and then obviously the draft aspect. One thing I will add when it comes to the conversations, the casual conversations between club personnel and agents, those conversations can't happen over the phone, because then you've put something on the books that said, okay, I've had contact when I am not supposed to be having contact right now. Mm-hmm. So the casual conversations that would be happening in person in Indianapolis about free agency are not happening, period, because they're not doing them over the phone. So
yeah, that's true, right? The league, if you were accused of tampering, the league can pull all your phone records and take a look and see who you've been talking to. Whereas at the combine, it's not like they can prove you were talking to some guy. So yeah, good point.
Exactly. So March 15th through March 17th, that's when everything is going to go, I think, absolutely bananas, because that's officially when clubs are permitted to contact unrestricted free agents and enter into contract negotiations with their agents. So I think like that period, everyone, turn your Twitter notifications on, just be nearby a computer, because I think, you know, patience is the name of the game right now. Anything you're going to be seeing out there on the internet, just take everything with a grain of salt. And there's just really not a lot right now to talk about. And then as far as the conversations with prospects, so I believe looking at pro days right now, and I think things are going to continue to evolve as we get closer. I believe the first pro day is March 5th, and they run through March until April, really close leading up to the draft. So it's going to be like pro day palooza. And I believe teams are permitted to send up a max of 3 personnel members to each pro day, which to me doesn't sound like very many, but I suppose 3
that's 32. Pretty standard, really. Yeah. I mean, usually the Packers send 2 to Wisconsin. That's the only pro day I've ever been to. So maybe they might send 3.
Right. But now they're combine lists too. So it's 3, and this is your combine essentially.
True. Yeah.
So it's a little bit different. And then there's also no top 30 visits too. So teams aren't bringing in people to their facilities because of COVID. So I think there's going to be a lot more virtual conversations happening with a lot more players, because that's the only option this year. And it's like a relatively, like they have this relatively large period of time to get it all done, as opposed to just being in Indianapolis where you'd have the week, less than the week, to have those conversations face-to-face. Now you've got all this time leading up to the draft to do those conversations remotely. So just like little differences. I'm assuming there's going to be more of those conversations. Like I feel like teams are going to try to talk to just about everybody.
Well, is there a limit? I haven't really looked at the rules on it.
I haven't seen one, but from what I've heard, it sounds like teams are going to try to talk to a lot more than they would typically.
Yeah, it seems, it seems kind of ridiculous. Like you should be limited to the same amount of guys you would talk to at the combine, and it should be limited to 15 minutes. I mean, otherwise these guys are going to be talking to every single club. It's going to be insane. Yeah. So I don't know, we'll see. I'm interested to see what the rules end up being.
Yeah, I'm curious to read a little bit more about those too. So we'll see, and we'll update you all on those things as they continue to work them out. But yeah, so that's that on the combine, or the lack thereof. Apparently there is a combine list, but it is not being shared, even though there is no combine. So I think that should be shared next month at some point. So at least we'll have a sense of who was invited, even though there is no actual quote unquote combine this year. So
yeah.
Cool. Wish we were down in India this year. Unfortunately, just not the reality. So yeah, Packers. What about the Packers? So since we last spoke to all of you, it's been a little while. The Packers have named their next defensive coordinator in Joe Barry. And Tom, you were on top of the reporting. So I think first, let's talk a little bit about Joe Barry's background. So he most recently served as the assistant head coach and linebackers coach of the Los Angeles Rams. Barry and LaFleur have some familiarity working together on Sean McVay's first coaching staff with the Rams back in 2017. Mm-hmm. And then LaFleur and Barry individually worked with Sean McVay in Washington at different times. So the three of them have existed in the same sphere multiple times in the past. Barry is probably best known, most notorious for his experiences as defensive coordinator, both with Washington in 2015 and 2016, and then two seasons with the Lions as defensive coordinator, 2007 and 2008.
Yeah.
Well, interesting to note about his coordinator gigs, none of the four defenses that he led as a coordinator ranked higher than 28th in yards or 19th in scoring. So some questions around his coordinator experience in contrast with the success that he had working with the Rams most recently, the Rams this past season, with Brandon Staley as defensive coordinator, now head coach of the Rams, was that that defense was the top ranked defense in 2020. And Barry was planning to leave the Rams to go work with Staley with the Chargers. And then he got offered the coordinator gig. So as Packers fans have learned more about Barry and have read more about his experience in the league and in general, how does one reconcile the fact that his stints as coordinator did not go so well? However, he has had some recent success.
Yeah, well, you know, the Detroit experience was a disaster, and I don't know how much of that was his fault. They were just devoid of talent, you know, especially the year they went 0-16 with Rod Marinelli as the coach. That's a job he needed to be a coordinator, and Rod Marinelli is his father-in-law, and but he just got in a bad situation. And I've talked to someone who was with the Lions during that time, and he just said the entire operation was a disaster. So I don't know how much you can put on him for that. His second stint was in Washington, and that probably wasn't a great job either. They were pretty dysfunctional at the time, and they had a little more talent. Preston Smith was a rookie under Barry, but you know, that's another one where, did he have all the talent he needed? I don't know. Then he goes to the Rams, and so his whole philosophy, or he's mostly worked in the Tony Dungy Tampa 2 system, which is really a system where, you know, both safeties play back and you have really fast linebackers and you count on your front four to get all the pass rush. It's not a big blitzing defense. And so he kind of, that was his philosophy. Then he came to LA and started to learn the Vic Fangio system under Brandon Staley. And so he did that for a year. That's a 3-4 system as opposed to a 4-3 Tampa system. And but there's a lot of similarities. And bottom line is he's had 1 year in this defense, and LaFleur, you know, he brought in the candidates. He wants this type of defense that the Rams ran, and he quizzed all of them. You know, he had big, long meetings with all the candidates, and he felt that Barry was the best at explaining the defense and understanding the defense. So that's who he went with.
It's funny, if I went back and looked at a article, an interview that ESPN did back in 2019, where they talked to LaFleur, Sean McVay, and Kyle Shanahan, and they asked them all the same question about which defense they most disliked going up against, the toughest defense to go up against. And all three of them mentioned the Broncos and Vic Fangio. So here we are, flash forward a couple years later, I suppose more than a couple years later. And, you know, McVay is running it, and now LaFleur also wants to get into it. So what's, I suppose, yeah, let's talk a little bit about this scheme as well. So as you mentioned, Tom Barry's background is with the Tony Dungy, Monty Kiffin, Tampa 2 system, which is a variation of Cover 2. What's interesting, yeah, I suppose, like in its very most basic sense, it does typically in Cover 2, you have the two high safeties responsible for the deep halves of the field, and then the cornerbacks are responsible for the flat, and then the four linebackers are underneath. You can kind of blitz them as you see fit, which leaves the like middle of the field kind of vulnerable. And so what Tampa 2 does is fire a linebacker into that hole in the middle of the field and kind of helps defenses guard against dig/in routes, which would typically beat a Cover 2 in its most basic sense. So it does ask the linebackers to do a little bit more coverage.
Mm-hmm. You have to have athletic linebackers for sure.
Absolutely. So that's something to keep in mind. However, Barry, as you mentioned, kind of in your reporting, Tom, will likely run a 3-4 system, which incorporates a lot of Staley's coverage philosophies, which includes a lot of combinations, zones, and pre-snap disguises. Something that the Rams like to do a lot was kind of mix up coverages. So some players are in man, some players are in zone, and keep offenses on their toes a little bit more and try to throw them off. And one of the players that really fit nicely into that scheme is cornerback Jalen Ramsey. You know, he's a player that you can kind of leave him in man and let him do his thing. And then it allows maybe other players to be in zone and kind of can dedicate some more personnel members to guard the other half of the field, to be in the other half of the field while Jalen Ramsey is in man against his receiver. I'm curious how you think the personnel that the Packers have will lend itself to the system, and if the Packers have the talent to excel in this system as some of the Rams players did last season.
Yeah, every system has to adapt to the players that it has and play to those strengths. Otherwise, I don't think you're a good defensive coordinator if you don't play to your particular team's talents. You know, one of the things that LaFleur really likes about this defense is it's kind of like his offense in the sense that it'll line up and it might look the same every play, but it's not. You know, after the snap, you talk about like Jalen Ramsey might be able to just lock down a guy. And they might line up like that, but then all of a sudden Jalen Ramsey might be in zone. And so they make it difficult, try to make it difficult for offenses to figure out what coverage they're in. They make trying to make the quarterback think a lot. On early downs, they are pretty, they're a little more basic. They just want to stop the run and they want to not give up a deep ball. So I don't know how the Packers exactly are going to fit into that. You know, I thought as far as having both safeties back, I thought Adrian Amos was a lot better near the line of scrimmage than he was deep. I thought when they started moving him to the line of scrimmage in the second half of the year, he played much better. Savage can play that role back there. Alexander could travel with guys, although, you know, he's not played slot corner before. And they have the pass rushers. They probably need more defensive tackle help. They definitely need upgrades at inside linebacker. They need to get more athletes there. And that, you know, they're going to have to be able to, you know, have more team speed. They're going to have to be a fast defense. And so I think they have the makings of a good unit. They just got to put it together and they just need another piece or two. Even if it's young talent, you know, someone they can throw in there that they can get some good snaps from, they might be able to pull this off with this defense. It's all going to depend on how well Barry can teach it.
And how free agency plays out, how the draft plays out, see if they can, they're going to have to fill in some holes as players leave, as they have to release some players. And we will have those discussions in the coming weeks as we approach free agency and the draft. It's an exciting time of year for, I feel like I call this period of time, there's a lot of dreams, the period of dreams, because we're talking to so many young players excited to break into the league. And I think for Packers fans too, it's like there's a lot of hope and aspirational stuff going on, looking at this, the new crop, the new draft class, and thinking about what the defense could look like, what the offense could look like, what their Super Bowl run could potentially look like next season. So you're a football fan, it's a fun, warm and fuzzy time, I guess, in my opinion. And then of course, hopefully we'll hear from Joe Barry soon enough, right? Like it's been how many weeks now that
he was hired? 3 weeks at least, right?
Four? Yeah, it's been about 3 weeks. So hopefully we'll get to hear from him soon enough. It's hard to talk about what exactly he wants to do without actually hearing it from his mouth. So,
right, exactly.
Hopefully we gave you a good enough taste of what we think the defense could potentially look like next season and what Joe Barry might want to do with this Packers defense. Before we move on from Barry, is there anything else you wanted to add?
I think we covered it pretty much. You know, it'll be interesting because one of the things that's different about this is that they're just changing the defensive coordinator and everybody else is staying put. So it's not like Barry's bringing in his own guys. He's going to have to work with the guys who are there and teach the system to them. I'm sure, you know, guys like Jerry Gray, he's been around long enough that he probably has a good understanding of it. They'll just have to, Kirk Olivadotti, I believe, was with Barry in Washington. So he has an understanding of it. I don't think it's going to be that hard of a transition, but it is unique that you bring a defensive coordinator and you don't change any other defensive coaches.
Absolutely. We'll continue to have these conversations. Once we finally hear from Barry, we'll come back and we'll make sure we discuss and analyze everything that he had to say. We're not here to overanalyze, but we'll try to interpret everything and give you our thoughts. So let's move on. Just wait. I feel like we have to touch on it. We have to, Tom. I know you weren't really you didn't really want to talk about this too much because it has been discussed quite a bit. JJ Watt is a free agent. The Houston Texans released him a couple weeks ago now. And he is on the market. He was set to make, I believe, $17.5 million with the Houston Texans this season. And my goodness, I'm sure he will try to make up as much of that money as he possibly can. The Packers, however, may not be able to offer him that much money. Sorry to break your hearts out there, Packers fans. And you know, I was talking to my dad about this as one does. And he was like, why wouldn't he just want to come home? This guy's made so much money in his career. Why wouldn't he just want to come home, go play with a great quarterback, a great team, a team that has made it to the NFC champions an NFC championship twice in the past two seasons. Why couldn't he just settle for that and take a massive hometown discount? The guy doesn't need any more money.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that, Tom?
Nobody plays the game for free. You just don't. I think the line I used in one of my stories was, you know, J.J. Watt has suffered tons of injuries, and his body he's put his body on the line for, was it 9 years or whatever it is he's been in the league, and he's going to do it for two more. He's not going to do it for free. And I can't blame him. I don't think, you know, you have this very short period of earning ability, and, you know, he turned down $17.5 million to try to find a new place. And I don't think he's just going there to do it for free. So I also think he's a guy who money matters. And so I have been skeptical about the Packers' interest from the beginning. I think it takes two to tango, and I don't know that the Packers are all that interested in taking a chance on a 32-year-old guy who's played 48 of the last 80 games, of his last 80 games. And I know people think he's going to be the J.J. Watt of defensive MVP caliber, but I'm not sure that, you know, they have to base it on what his tape was last year. And he was not the same player. And if they're going to invest that kind of money, or even if it's going to be less, if he's going to give him some kind of home discount, they still have to decide whether it's worth doing that. And I think really, I think they've said, my guess is they've just set a price and said, you know, for this amount, we'd do it, but not for anything above that. And I don't think that price is going to meet J.J. Watt's demands. He'll get a lot more from somebody else.
Longtime NFL reporter John Clayton reported yesterday, no, 2 days ago, as in Wednesday, February 24th, depending on when you're listening to this, 2 days ago for us, that he has a dozen teams after him. Him as in J.J. Watt, not John Clayton. and that Tennessee, Green Bay, and Buffalo are the leading teams, but not the final three. Watt has not narrowed his list, so the Cleveland Browns are still in the running, and so are the Las Vegas Raiders. So a dozen teams, that's a lot of teams. But it's also, well, it's very general.
yeah, I got a comment on that. I know
we go ahead.
Something on it, but that was... You know, Clayton has a radio show, and he was just, I think, speculating more on it. You know, he said leading teams. The Packers, I don't think the Packers are in the final three. I don't even know what the final three would be or what that means, because if this was coming down to a bidding war, it would be done. You know, J.J. Watt would be signed. I think the interest, he's finding the interest isn't as great as he thought it would be. And so now he's, you know, waiting it out and trying to get the best possible deal. But all the reports you're hearing, I take that with a grain of salt. I think he probably threw the Packers in there because, you know, why not? Because they're his home state. Maybe he will take a much lower deal, but don't count on it. Don't count on it.
Right. I think this goes back to our conversation that we had at the very beginning here. Again, it's like these conversations that typically would be happening face-to-face aren't happening this year at all, period, just because there is no combine and teams aren't picking up the phone and doing the tampering on the books. So something to just keep in mind when you're seeing things out there right now. But anyway, still, it's a conversation. I think everyone is hungry for something right now. I think it's just like a dead time before the draft, before free agency. It's like, what is there to talk about? What information is out there? And J.J. Yeah. Watt has been a big part of the void.
People shouldn't I mean, I understand why people are hyper-focused on him. You know, he's a Wisconsin kid and he was former defensive player of the year, and they think he's going to do what Reggie White did for them. But, you know, there's a lot of injury factor there. And you go back and look at it, Reggie White, and he had barely ever missed a game in his life, had never really been seriously injured. Same is true of free agents that Brian Gutekunst has paid big money for. They're not guys who get injured. So it just doesn't fit for the type of guy he would want. And there's all kinds of different acquisitions that they can make to improve their defense. And I think there's going to be some better bargains once salary caps are brought together. And, you know, if the Packers want to keep Aaron Jones, I don't know if they do, but they need to save money for that too. So there will be other options to improve their defense. This is not a, you know, one and done kind of a deal. There will be options that might even be better for the Packers than JJ Watt.
The bucket of cold ice water has been dumped on everyone now, Tom. So thank you.
I know on Twitter, they've been just hammering me as, as doomsday, you know, as Debbie Downer, as all of those kind of things. And I don't mind that. That's fine. Throw it on me. I'm just the realist. I'm telling it like it is, I believe.
Yeah, maybe I'm biased because I'd like you and you're my colleague, but like there is a difference between being pessimistic and being realistic. And I think you're being realistic.
Yeah, well, I'm a pessimist as well, too. But, you know, in this one, I'm trying to be more realist. I think I'm being more of a realist than a pessimist.
Oh, 100%. I would tell you if you weren't. So I'll give you a pass there. But I would also, I will say, I'm really enjoying the creativity on Twitter. So many people dissecting JJ Watt's daily tweets.
Yeah.
Love it. It's a lot of fun. I think there's nothing wrong with that. The mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. What could that possibly mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing what people come up with. Yep.
This is when I enjoy Twitter. I enjoy the internet, is the creativity that all of you have. So keep that up. But also, yeah, in the meantime, just understand, patience, wait till that legal tampering window to open. Things are going to start to happen. Free agency is just a few weeks away. Very exciting. Exciting times. Yeah,
and you know, we'll continue to follow the Packers free agents. You know, the last I heard, Corey Linsley, they have not spoken to him. I mean, there's been zero negotiations. I had that in my column about a week ago or so, and I don't think that's changed. And I think they just assume they can't re-sign him because it's going to be too expensive. You know, Aaron Jones may be reaching that level too. I don't know. But those are things we'll be watching. Jamal Williams, Kevin King, you know, they got some tenders they're going to have to give to Robert Tonyan, Tim Boyle. You know, there's trades they could make. Who knows? There's a lot of stuff that I think there's going to be kind of a very eventful offseason.
Yeah. Mercedes Lewis, Lane Taylor. There's some names too. Who knows? They could be back on a cheap deal.
Well, and then, you know, they're probably going to renegotiate Aaron Rodgers' deal. They're probably going to do some finagling with Za'Darius Smith's deal. There's going to be some cuts. You know, they're going to cut some guys. So that's all to come.
Next time on JS Online Packers News Green 19 podcast. So make sure you're coming back to wherever you're listening to us now. We'll keep you guys in the loop, continue to have these conversations. And as soon as we finally hear from Joe Barry, best believe we will be back on the mic discussing this all with you. So thanks everyone so much for listening. We look forward to getting back together very soon. Have a good one, and we'll chat with you next time.